It's your girl, Sky. You know, forever I love Atlanta. I say it with my chest, but currently I reside in the wild, wild west. And I'm with the homie. Hey, tell them who you are.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, Silves, from VA, two up, two down, all day. Also saying that with my chest. Currently out here in the Pacific Northwest, just living life, trying not to get killed by these critters. I'm gonna let y'all know, your girl got her second dose today, so I'm down bad a little bit, but we gonna power through, because we here to talk about soccer.
Yes, yeah, we are, because we are the Shea Butter FC. As in Shea Butter Football Club, a podcast bringing you two black women's perspective on soccer, football, and everything in between.
Delivering content with soul and seasoning that'll moisturize your skin.
Lay your edges.
And deepen your love for all things black women.
And see, in today's episode, we're going to add more vocabulary to your Shea Butter FC experience, because we forgot some things, and then we need to add a new definition. You'll see why. And then we're going to open our feature, because a certain entity won't get right. We're going to open the Shea Butter FC library for the gathering and reading of a particular entity, because they just messing up over players and the growth of the game in the United States in particular. And then yes, we're going to give a rundown of the FIFA window, the second set of international friendlies, including the surprising redemption performance of the U.S. women's national team against France. Yeah. And then what else are we doing?
Yeah, so we're also going to drop some more of our Shea Butter crossover features. Obviously, when we compare soccer players to basketball players from the NBA and WNBA. And we're going to introduce two new segments for you. The Shea Butter FC Top 10, which again, we're sure won't be controversial at all. And we're going to do the Shea Butter Music Hits and Riffs, and we'll explain that when we get to it. And of course, we're going to be sharing more of our popular rants and raves. So let's get into it.
Oh yeah, also, we're also going to talk about the National Women's Soccer League Challenge Cup. Yes. Oh, speaking of which, that's a perfect segue into this first segment, which is the Shea Butter FC Library Reading Room. Like, you know, the library, because we're about to open up and read. Because, you see, this particular entity, the National Women's Soccer League, has been acting a fool and subtly been kind of messing up the flow of our podcast, because we've had to trace the racism and problematicisms. So we're dedicating a segment.
Yeah.
Because we're about to start the gathering and the collection. But before before we get there, let's do, as we are in the library, let's expand our vocabulary.
Yes.
Because we forgot, we've been slinging around words and we didn't give y'all definitions. So first off, the Shea Butter FC delegation. Tell the people what that is.
Yeah, the Shea Butter FC delegation, or to be a delegate of the Shea Butter FC delegation. It's a black woman that is a footballer, essentially. That's domestic for those of you in the United States or abroad. We claim it everybody, right? So we here to be loud and support the homies.
Right. And so you might have been saying, well, so if I don't qualify as a part of the delegation, then what if I'm a supporter, I'm a friend of Shea Butter FC, the podcast, you know, you homies of Sky and Sills, or you supporter of the members of the delegation, then sure. Who are you? Well, you were then the what?
Shea Butter FC squad. So you're a squad member, squad goals, however you want to do it, right? So yeah, we appreciate the support. The delegation appreciates the support. Keep it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so then our new word is the Shea Butter Wusa. Shea Butter FC Wusa. Mm-hmm. Shea Butter Wusa FC Wusa and chill. because we got some dramatic members of the delegation, and then they do things on the field when things go wrong, ponytails get yanked. they make some groans and frustrations, and all are extra, but while being phenomenal players.
Yes.
And it's important to be expressive. So we got to get,
you know what I mean? You know, get your Viola Davis on, you know?
Yeah. Cause really actually, cause actually one person in particular and her clearly junior version of counterpart, they were on one this week, and we're going to talk about that a little later, but yeah, the Shea Butter FC. Yeah.
All right.
So it's about that time.
Yeah, I think we should get started. Get it out the way. You know what I mean?
All right.
It's been a week.
All right. So come on, y'all. Let's gather around. because it's time for the reading in the library. Particularly you. This is dedicated to you, National Women's Soccer League, the office, the entities, everybody, from the commissioner.
I hear the Reading Rainbow theme song going on right now.
Oh, you hear it? Reading Rainbow.
In my mind, yeah.
But
it's
the read, for real, for real.
Yeah, it's for real.
So, you know, in the National Women's Soccer League has shown its complete ass over the last few weeks. And the season hasn't even started. We are in preseason and we act in the fourth.
Yes.
So last week we let y'all know that a variety of things happened. And so you expect things to go not the way you expected. You just didn't expect the NWSL to just take it to another level where it's like you didn't have it on your bingo card that XYZ would happen. Because you couldn't think the thing. So let's review a little bit. So first off, you had a crazy fight happen and 4 red cards get given over the course of a game.
Yes.
As a result of particularly a brawl in the middle of the game where 2 red cards were given between a white player and Warren Weaver and a black player and Kristen Edmonds. Mm-hmm. You then had the Portland Thorns social media team and owner make comments on Twitter between showing video and then inflammatory card comments effectively insinuating Morgan Weaver, who actively participated in this situation and put hands to Kristen Edmonds' face as Kristen Edmonds put hands on her face. Right. Also make crazy comments with video saying that she was innocent. Right. Totally missing how that could look in terms of you got a black player and a white player and then the stereotypes that comes with that. And the bullying that can result, which Kristen Edmonds gets bullied. But this madness happening on Twitter, you know, between the owner and the social media team and the doubling down about it.
Yes.
You had Megan Klingenberg, you had Kling, who lovely called also, make comments about the bad refereeing in the game. Nothing inflammatory, just normal. Yeah. At the same time, earlier in the day, you had Sarah Gordon post Houston Dash game experience racism, call it out. And then the next day you had Houston Dash put out a horrible statement.
That basically said it was about COVID protocol.
Right. And then they make another statement after getting bullied on social media over it that kind of acknowledged it, but still horrible.
Yes.
You then had the Chicago Red Stars owner, one of the owners, Sarah Spain, make a comment in support of Sarah Gordon. Mm-hmm. And then you had Elise LaHue of the Gotham FC make a comment in regards to it in support of Sarah Gordon. You had the players from Chicago Red Stars, from Houston Dash make comments in support of Sarah Gordon.
Yes.
And so, you had all that happen. On top of you had a promo video that then blasted the pain of Casey
Kruger.
That was already talked about as problematic in the promo video. We then made a mini movie before the actual Challenge Cup that just took it to another level. So we had all these things happening. And then this week, the NWSL started to hand out judgments. So they basically rescinded Morgan Weaver's red card, which made no kind of sense because normally that only happens if it was the egregious error, there was no player involvement, or, you know, something on film overturned it. None of that happened. One, you didn't have anything get addressed in terms of Mark Parsons' red card because apparently he got thrown out for whatever he said during the game. So if there's abusing the ref or something, what's going on? We don't acknowledge that. Merritt Paulson gets fined, but we don't address the behavior of the social media team that then triggered a bullying to Kristen Edmonds. Kristen Edmonds, not only her red card gets validated, but then she gets an additional suspension. But Morgan Weaver gets off free. Megan Klingenberg.
She got a red card. I mean, a yellow card. Sorry, but still, she got to play the next.
She got to play.
We'll cover later. Yeah.
Yeah, and it scored and helps them win the game the next game. We'll get to it. Yeah. Megan Klingenberg, she got a fine for what she said to the refs, which wasn't inflammatory. So it's like, what can you say? What can you do? Oh, but then it just gets even worse. Then you get Chicago Red Stars. They get fined. Gotham FC gets fined for the statements that were provided in support of Sarah Gordon because it violated some obscure.
It was a gag order, I think, that they said had been placed and that they violated it. And then I guess the issue is Houston said something as well and wasn't fined.
Houston get fined. And then also they violated something in some obscure point of the handbook.
A rule that had been written, like, maybe when the league started. I don't even know.
Right. And then, by the way, the disciplinary committee that hands down all this stuff, we don't know who's on the committee and what they look like and where they are.
Transparency whatsoever.
So we just flipping and flopping away. Anyway, all these egregious things have happened over the course of the week that just it just took NWSL foolery to another level.
Yes.
And so it has become clear that us at Shea Butter FC, we have to step in. And we got to read y'all that it's about that time, guys, that we get it together. Because you see, y'all are doing things where you're not being accountable for your problematicism. It's not even just the racism. It's also the homophobia. It's the transphobia. It's the ableism. It's all the problematic behavior where you're disenfranchising not only your players, but fans. And then you're helping to continue to torpedo this game into a position where it seems like it's not worth a damn in the country, where you get this perception that people don't like football, soccer in the United States, when they actually do. They just aren't welcome, let alone they don't have the access. And so this is contributing to the narrative that it doesn't seem popular, and then which contributes to people not wanting to market, not wanting to put you on the ESPNs and whatever networks willingly and freely. You know, this contributes to the loss of mad money and funding. And so
it does, right? And if you were able to, I think, at least curtail the problem, right, you're not going to end it, obviously, in one fell swoop. Racism is endemic in this country and everywhere else in the world. Anti-Blackness is endemic in this country and everywhere else in the world. But I just think about with racism, right, like what you're losing, right, with the infusion of the culture into the game, which is part of why we do the podcast, right? And we talked about, you know, what songs do you hear, the language that you can have, the clothing, you know, that you could have, all of those things that culture enhances, you're keeping yourself from it because you can't get out of your own way and not be racist for 2 seconds in order to, at the very least, you know, capital, you know, speaking in capitalist terms, make money, make more money.
Right. And so with all that said, you're reaching a point where at some point players are going to get tired of the foolishness and they ain't going to want to play. And so then somebody's going to come along and actually create a league that is actually diverse, equitable, and inclusive. The DEI that's slinging around. And so it's like, you need to get it together before somebody else get it together for you. And so that you just stop fumbling the bag, because we just fumbling the bankrolls.
Yeah, it's a loss of revenue that you don't even know you're losing. And so, and again, soccer's for everyone. Like, it should be inclusive, right? It's the most popular sport in the world. You should be more diverse. It should be a safe space for all of your players, not just some of your players. And so, honestly, I'm glad we're talking about it. We had to make it a segment, like the homie said, because if we just rant every week, the show would be like 2 or 3 hours long. Right. We don't want to do that to y'all. And they keep giving us stuff to talk about.
So. Right. So this is how you get the solution, because you just can't read the anti-racism book. You can't just read the anti.
Well, you do actually have to read it first, but
Well, you got to. But wait, before we even get there. First off, because it's none, nada. As I said, for the last 2 weeks, there is not a nary of a diversity, equity, inclusion situation anywhere.
Can't be.
Not at all. So therefore, we need to rectify that this week, today, tomorrow. Lisa, you need to get on the phone and contact you an organization so they can do a thorough review of the end. It don't need to be the thorough, because in a day you can get a lot done. But they need to do a thorough review of what's happening across the league at the league offices level. Institute training for your whole office situation, the league offices, from the commissioner all the way down to the VP, to the executive board, to the staff, to the janitors, to everybody. You got to go to the players. Then you got to go to the owners. And you got to go to everybody. Get everybody in the training. From there, you're going to go put the hammers and the nails to the ground and build the foundation to build the building for the diversity, equity, and inclusion office, because it's this serious that you're gonna have a whole building with multiple floors, right. Maybe 114 per team that you can add a floor to it. You need that many diversity and equity inclusion people to help you fix this issue that's so ingrained that you're going to then give them the power to hold people accountable and then begin to do the training cross country. But on top of that, you're going to make sure there's diversity, equity, inclusion offices and divisions in every single team. Actually make owners pay into making those kind of things so it is a part of the culture, so that they can take the time to review what the clubs do, how they're treating their players, give support, look at what the social media team does, look what's happening from a public relationship standpoint, even looking at in terms of if you're partnering with stadiums where you don't have control, looking to make sure that if something happens where you have racism in a stadium that might not be yours, this doesn't fly.
Right, that you have recourse, because there's no clarity, right? And that can't be... You can't contract with people who are going to treat your players like that.
And this isn't new, because this has happened not only to Sarah. This has happened to Sydney LaRue. This has happened to Adriana French. This happened to Jessica McDonald. This has happened to so many players. And this is not no one fell swoop type thing. You got players who, like, they don't feel safe. Many players in stadiums.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's like you have to address it and be accountable. So you got to have these divisions in places in each city, everywhere. And be actively making people, you know, practice actual anti-problematicism. Because it's an active thing. You don't kumbaya your way. You don't challenge cut promo, mini movie your way, racism, homophobia, transphobia, and everything in between.
Okay. Yeah. I just think, like, it's work, right? Like, so when people say the work, did y'all not think it was work? Like, it's going to be work. It's not easy, right? We're literally doing this in the face of systems that were constructed to uphold these very values, right? Particularly the supremacy value, which affects everything else, right? Again, anti-racist work will help you with how you treat your LGBTQ community, how you treat trans and non-binary athletes, how you treat people with disabilities. All of that comes in to play, right? And again, I'm really tired, right? Like, I want soccer to love me back, right? I love the sport, and I want it to love me back. And I also will say, in addition to DEI, right? Because that's a trendy word. It's not an end all be all thing. Mm-hmm. But also, and I'm trying to walk this line here about how much labor you put on Black and Brown people do the work of saving themselves. But also, you need to be hiring Black and Brown people at all different levels, right? Your perspective isn't there. If you can't hear people when they tell you, please take that Twitter post down, this is how it sounds, and you leave it up and you block people and you're not willing to hear or engage in any of the work, your team is too white. That's just the reality, right? So, and that seems to be a problem a lot. And it's not just the NWSL, it's not just MLS, it's our federation, right? We've had many issues where people have called out the marketing and other things that happen, right? You had a whole guy, part of the Players Coalition, go on a rant on the floor the day after, you know, we understood that the policy about standing or not standing had been reinvoked or whatever, only to be overturned again. So now players can kneel. But like, when we say soccer is white, we mean at every level. And this is what happens, right? It makes you short-sighted. It makes you not be able to have different points of view. You think you're right. You think it's about your feelings. It's not about your feelings. It's about the players and their families and the fans and everybody else who makes up that sport. You are not bigger than soccer. So be quiet and listen to your players and everybody else, particularly your Black and Brown fans, your fans with disabilities, your trans and non-binary fans. Listen to them. We are telling you about our lived experience. We are telling you we want to love soccer. We are telling you we want it to be inclusive. It's for everyone. It's not just about you. So yes, get these DEI teams in place, starting with the league. Make your board transparent, because this is ridiculous that we don't know who's making these decisions at all. And they're incredibly unfair to the players. I'm really upset about the Klingenberg one, just because what are players supposed to do? Never speak about how bad the refereeing is and there's no accountability. Like, that to me is incredibly problematic for players and coaches alike. because the referees should be held accountable. And I know that's an issue in other leagues as well, but there's no accountability for officiating. And that's a problem. That's too much power. So get some transparency going, get these DEI programs started, and do better. Cause right now you have the league that you want and it seems a little racist.
A little, just extremely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's problematic around. It's all over. Well, now, yeah, that's it. I'll do better.
I think that's enough.
But, right. Yeah. So we closing this out. Y'all have been read. Y'all been checked. The reading, the books of the library. Well, yes. No, the doors of the library have been opened and y'all been thoroughly read. Get your shit together in WSL. Do better. And please stop being hell-bent on being problematic. Can we have peace this week, please? That's all we ask.
Amen.
But anyway, that's it. So now we're going to get into some fun in these international friendlies and the U.S. Women National Team's redemption story against the France National Team in a game of self-sabotage. Uh-oh. I just opened up the Pandora's box. We'll talk about it after the break. See you soon.
Hey guys, this is Elliot, the co-host of Can I Kick It at River City 93. As always, if you're looking for the most up-to-date shows on Black history, what's going on in the game, and off the pitch, then come check us out at Can I Kick It. You can find us on Instagram or Twitter at River City 93. And as always, guys, like, share, and subscribe to our podcast, and we'll catch you guys on the good side.
What's up, family? Welcome back. So we're going to get into this FIFA break. We had a second.
Welcome back.
Sorry. Welcome back. Yes. We're going to get into this FIFA break. We had a second round of games this past week. We're going to touch on a few of them. And then obviously we're going to get into the United States game versus France, the redemption game, if you will. Maybe a little bit of self-sabotage as well. Ooh. I think we talked about.
Yep.
So let's get into that. First game, we're going to talk about the England-Canada matchup, which Canada won 2-0 on goal from Vienz and the homie Nichelle Prince. Shout out.
Hey.
Shea Butter delegation.
That's a Shea Butter bomb, baby.
She liked our tweet this week. So you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm feeling myself. We up here.
What's up, Nichelle Prince?
What's good?
Love watching you play. Love seeing your growth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we started with this game because England lost both of their international games over this break.
Ooh.
And as a team that's sort of been touted as the United States's biggest competition, right, just in terms of talent and depth and everything else, it's looking a little funny in the light. Again, they have tons of talent. They do have world-class players, but maybe as a team structure, it's struggling to come together a little bit. It might be about who's called up. It might be about tactics. I'm not 100% sure, but it all seems a bit off. I don't know quite what's going on with that.
I mean,
throwing the Great Britain factor that's coming this summer. Yeah, right. I don't know what that's
when you got Ebony Salmon not in your camp and she's healthy.
True. It would change how you play.
What are we doing?
And obviously, I believe Nikita Paris is able to play despite the Lyon outbreak. So, you know, and she and Kirby were able to team up, particularly in that first game against France. And they did score against the French on a penalty kick by Fran Kirby. And they were able to find some space. But I think the more sound the defense, the more they seem to struggle. And they seem to struggle to defend against speed, right? And Canada has sneaky good speed on the ball. And they're just physical, right? You're not going to necessarily punt Canada around.
Right.
So,
Canada was missing people.
True. Canada was missing people. I know Sinclair was hurt. And Canada's sneaky good, right?
Like
they might be. They're not going to be an easy out for anybody. And they're coming, and they got a lot of young talent. I know Ashley Lawrence balled out today in the game we'll talk about later. But, yeah, so Canada's coming. So it's not a knock on Canada per se, but just for a team that was touted to be sort of the main competition or one of the best teams in the world, it's looking a little funny in the light.
That sounded similar to the Australia situation.
Yeah, I think that is the bigger area of concern. So for those that don't know, Australia played Germany in their first game of the international break and lost that game 5-2. I'll show you score both of their goals after the 80th minute, and they were already down 4-0, and they lost 5-0 to the Netherlands in their second.
Oh Lord Jesus Christ!
Australia just let in 10 goals in 2 games for a team that again was touted as an up and coming team. They obviously have a superstar in Sam Kerr. They have a lot of players in the Women's Super League, the English top flight league. Formerly played in the NWSL and now play in England, are doing quite well for themselves. But something isn't translating. I do know they got a new coach recently, former U.S. assistant Tony. I'm sorry, I don't remember Tony's last name right now. So part of it is just sort of figuring out, you know, your mentality, your philosophy, gelling with your coach, things of that nature. But that defense is a problem if you're letting in 10 goals against good competition. So this is also a team going to the Olympics this summer. So they have a very short window to sort of figure out how to fix that defense. That wasn't a good international showing for Australia at all. So I'm a little worried about them, not necessarily playing them, but just them as a team. That was a bit rough. So I'm not quite sure what's going on with both of those teams. Like I said, new coaching probably has something to do with it, but for teams that are, you know, supposedly loaded with talent and that, you know, I'm not saying they aren't. It looked a little funny in the light.
Well, so then Cameroon lost to Chile.
Yeah.
For the last play-in for the Olympics.
Yes.
That means Lord Edler is back to
the best goalkeeper the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah, best goalkeeper in the world. Yes. Is back. It's going to be back in the Olympics to terrorize Kristen and Lindsay. Yes. We're going to get her if we run into her. But
yeah.
And then you had Spain play Mexico.
Yeah, and I was proud of Mexico for taking that game, you know, taking on the challenge of playing a very good, very highly ranked team. And for the first half, that was a shutout. It was a 0-0 score at halftime. Unfortunately, Mexico ended up losing that game 3-0. I think a lot of it had to do with Spain finishing chances that they didn't finish in the first half. Per usual, Spain had about 75-ish% of the possession, so Mexico didn't get a lot of time on the ball. And I think Spain definitely challenges some of Mexico's defensive strategy. But I thought Mexico played really well, again, particularly in the first half. I think part of it was just they were a bit tired, and Spain sort of came on and does what Spain does and put the clamps down defensively and was able to, again, work in those tight spaces and get the ball out. But I'm proud of Mexico, and I still maintain they're coming. They're going to be a problem for years to come. They're definitely going to be – our main competition at CONCACAF along with Canada and a few other squads. And that league is amazing, and it's really up and coming. And so I'm excited to see what Mexico does. I'm hoping they make the World Cup so we can see what they look like against some of the top competition in the world. Hopefully they get to the knockout stages. And I think anytime, you know, a team for CONCACAF does well, that's good for everyone, or for CONMEBOL for South American teams. That's good for everyone. And with some of the news coming out today, that might, those leagues might get more players sooner rather than
later. Wait. We're gonna get.
But yeah, just in terms of thinking, you know, futuristically, both for our domestic leagues and some of our partners on the side of the hemisphere. That can only be a good thing. But I'm excited to see Mexico and their growth. And again, really happy that they took on the challenge, and they can only go up from here.
Yep. And so that leads us to the game of the week.
All right.
Well, the midweek, but whatever.
Yes.
The U.S. women's national team's redemption story, yes. Where Flacco threw out a lineup that we actually kind of guessed really well.
We did. We got 10 out of 11, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So on the front line, you had Megan Rapinoe on left wing. Mm-hmm. You had Alex Morgan as your striker, central striker, 9. And you had Kristen Press as your right winger. Yes. Midfield, who we had out there?
Midfield, we had Rose Lavelle on the right, though, you know, Rose cheats central all the time. We had Julie Ertz, obviously, as our defensive midfielder. And then we bought on Samantha Mewis, because if Pino's on the left, Samantha Mewis will be on the left because they play well together.
Right.
So we predicted that correctly. And then, well, we got to talk about it. Who's on that back line?
The best player in the world, Crystal Dunn. Let's see. Then you had Abby Delkepper. Becky Sauerbrunn, and then Kelly O'Hara
started. So
yep,
yeah. So overall, I thought that was a pretty good lineup. I think at this point, in terms of national team scouting and whatnot. Obviously, with Casey Kruger not being able to come over with a pre-camp knock, we don't have a ton of options at right back. So I get that decision. It's never going to be one that I love. And it's not because I don't think O'Hara – I think O'Hara has been very good. I just don't think she is what she used to be. And I think it's been that way for a couple of years. And I'm more upset with the team, I guess, for not – or the Federation for not sort of planning for that and seeing the writing on the wall and having things in place to be able to cover for that once that time comes to an end. But having said that, we got the job done.
We got the job done. We actually – was in control most of the game. All the game, actually. Yeah. There wasn't any whoop-de-doops. It wasn't a Brazil putting mad stress on the back line on that right side type of situation. Yeah. There was no shutting down flows of anybody or anything. You didn't have Kristen Press doing mad, insane defensive work. That's a lie. She still and Roosevelt had to do defensive work because of the right back situation. Yeah. But it was nowhere near as bad as like Vlacko having to substitute the whole team out. It was pretty tame because the French coach put out a lineup that she put all the best. The successful players in the England match, half of them was on the bench.
Exactly. That was an odd. Okay. I guess we should preface it by saying for as messy as the United States Federation is, the French Federation is equally as messy in different ways.
Right.
And the relationship between the players and their coach, Corinne Diacre, I believe I'm saying that right.
Hey.
My French is very rusty.
Okay, I see y'all here.
But that's been a pretty toxic relationship for a while, pretty much since she took the job. I remember when she took the job and then they played in that She Believes Cup and they lost that first match. And all of the sort of... just insults, it felt like, that she hurled at her new team, even though it was the lineup she chose and she didn't choose her best lineup then either. But she seems to have the backing of the Federation to the point where, you know, Sarah Bouhadi, who is the number one French goalkeeper and has been for a long time, isn't playing for the national team. There was a time when they didn't think Wendy Renard, who's one of the best players in the world, was going to play. She's had a huge falling out with Amandine Henry, who's captained that team for a very long time and is one of its, you know, most celebrated players. It's just a really uncomfortable situation for a team that, in my mind, it's either the United States or France who's the most loaded team in women's football in terms of national teams. You know, there's a couple others there, obviously Germany's, the England's, and that of the like, but or Japan, sorry, I don't want to leave people out. But that team is loaded and it has talent and it has creative talent. We're going to brag about a few of those players, you know, coming up in the show. But it just feels like a team that loaded shouldn't have to suffer that kind of coaching. And I don't think they're in a headspace to win in spite of her, right? I think we've had that conversation about our national team. There are a lot of times they won in spite of, right?
Yes, they did.
And I don't think Diacre is as bad on the tactical side, right? Like, I do think she actually knows how to do soccer, if that makes sense. But it's the rest of it, and it gets in the way.
Right.
Of what could be a very terrifying French team who always seems to underachieve, even though, again, they're loaded with talent. And she, like you said, she didn't put out a good lineup. And so we were able to work those spaces. Having said that, though, I guess there's a few things I would take away from that. And one is we shouldn't still be talking about who the starter is at number nine, right?
No, it's Alex Morgan, point blank period.
Alex Morgan.
It's Carly didn't even sub in until 8 o'clock in the game. Cause I think Vlacko understands.
And it just
Alex Morgan
showed
it looked better
to the eyeball, like the eyeball test, right? Like the difference between the Sweden game and the French game with the movement of your nine was just so very obvious.
And then Crystal Dunn had a bunch of bricks. So she shut down the other side of the field. Kelly O'Hara was still getting smoked
Baltimore came in.
She came into the game in second half, she was burning up the right side. So Kristen Press and Roosevelt had to work, but both Kristen Press and Roosevelt, they was styling, they was moving, they was getting it in. Kristen Press had dimes, Shea Butter dimes.
She did have a Shea Butter dime too.
Yeah, Crystal Dunn had bricks and the mic checks because she almost hit a crazy.
Ooh, can we talk about that mic check though? Because that whole play,
yeah,
just she lost the ball to the defender, and they're scoring third.
Uh-huh.
It's the ball back off of the defender who was taller than her and probably just as strong as her, pretty effortlessly, like in a way that I just had to look up and be like, wait a minute. Makes the turn, pivots, goes toward the box, and then, like you said, mic check, just at an angle, blast it at the French goalkeeper who makes a good save.
Right.
But it was just one of those plays, and I believe I tweeted about it on the account, but just how is that not the best player in the world? Like, there's no way that play makes sense.
Yeah, she's the best player in the world. I don't, the Shea Butter FC offices, she is the best player in the world. Y'all can argue with your mama, argue with your stuffed animals.
Exactly.
but yeah, Kristen Press had a dime to Alex Morgan. She almost had another dime to Megan Rapinoe.
Oh, Pino.
But Pino was offsides, and then Kristen was like, what you doing, shawty?
Yeah, that was a beautiful ball in. Yeah, Pino knew it too. She looked remorseful, so at least she felt bad about it.
Oh, and then Kristen had a woosah moment, a Shea Butter FC woosah. So Kristen Press has phenomenally beautiful hair. I want your hair care routine, Mama. Let me know.
Yes.
She got phenomenal hair that she puts in a. She can his right now. Well, playing in the WSL, she's been having it in a bun. But she had the ponytail just dangling. Initially she got beat in the box by the defender. Yes. She got depossessed, but then she got the ball back. And she was about to go burn up the left side when her hair gets yanked. She completely
It was aggressive.
It was aggressive. It was red card worthy. And then she just laid on out and was like.
She stayed down for a minute.
And so, yeah. She's had a few of these over the last friendlies between the in the Argentina game. And then she had a couple of moments in that game where she was laid out.
There's another one where she laid down. Yeah. It was just like, I get it. Get up.
The meditation queen had her whole fair share.
Was that what she was doing? Meditating.
Yeah, she was meditating, praying a little bit. How's she not going to choke out somebody?
And the hair pull was Shayon Shay crying, but the homie from France did extend the hand, and I don't think it was intentional.
It wasn't intentional. That's the only reason she didn't get a red.
But it was bad, right? It like yanked her neck. You could very much.
Yeah.
There's a reason we don't grab hair, right? Like you can absolutely throw somebody's whole spine out of whack.
Right.
So soccer is not for the faint of heart. That's for sure. But it still was a very good game. And you're right. She had won the ball back and was pretty much going to take off down, you know, that left line to get the ball in on the cross, which she can do very well, obviously. I just thought it was an overall pretty good, maybe like a B+, A- performance by the United States, who, again, I don't love the talk about, you know, women's national team mentality, right? Like that gets thrown around a lot. But I will say we don't lose twice. Like that seems to be part of a mindset where we just refuse. And we didn't lose to Sweden, obviously, but just
we don't have like bad performances twice. Like that.
Yeah. Back to back, you know, sort of being able
particularly
to
in this Blacko era.
Yeah. Yeah. And he made good calls. Like he coached better as well, right? Because he got out coached in that Sweden game. So that let me know that he's able to adapt and adjust and make the necessary changes. And I think when he has his full complement of players and people he can call up into the June camp, I'm interested to see what that'll look like and who we play in the Tournament of Nations will make a difference as well.
June gonna be on fire.
It is. So yeah, I think that's our conversation, and we'll talk in the coming weeks about who we think should be
right
on that Olympic roster, because we have some thoughts if you don't know that already.
Right. So speaking of a lot of the France national team, well, they play today in the second leg of the UEFA Women's Champions League game.
Yes.
Tell the people, set the scene, set the stage.
Well, I, despite my dosage, woke up at 5 a.m. to watch this game. It was worth it, by the way. So going into this, just to recap for people, Lyon was up 1-0 on a penalty kick by Wendy Renard off of a handball call that was absolutely incorrect. So PSG was going to need a minimum of 2 goals to win. So the game opens, and within the first 4 minutes, Leon scores. The goal was scored by our very own Katarina Macario. Please take note, the very young player, American player, scored a goal in a Champions League game. She's coming, so we're very excited about that. But outside of the first 10 minutes or so, at no point did Leon look like the better team. And that was true for most of the first leg as well. PSG absolutely was the better team.
Yep.
And they still only needed two goals because they're the away team, so away goals count more. So two goals still sends them through. And I kept thinking, well, PSG's hunting. They missed a few really fat chances. I think Katoto missed one.
Yep.
And it's played a little unselfishly in ways that I kind of wish he had been selfish today. And I think Ziani might have missed one.
Yes.
But there was a shot. But there was a shot by PSG that gets deflected, saved, and Grace is Giaro, I think. I apologize, yes, Grace, if I said your name incorrectly, because she gets the rebound in his an absolute shea butter bomb.
Big it's ball a shea in, butter bomb, baby.
Big ball in back of the net.
Woo! Yes, it did.
Filthy shot that she lets off from an angle on the right hand side.
That thing had Leon like. They was all like, ref, she was offside. I was like, girl, no, she wasn't offside, baby. That was a goal, boo.
You might have felt that way when she hit it, but no, she was not offside. And so half that game itself was not at 1-1, but Leon obviously was up 2-1 with one away goal. And so honestly, the next goal was going to win it. And Leon had a few moments of joy earlier in the second half. They sort of figured out a structure. They really couldn't maintain it. And the truth of the matter is, I don't know if any team's going to have it for that PSG midfield.
Wait. Did we talk about the error that caused the goal?
Oh, we're getting there. I'm about to get there.
Okay.
But I did want to shout out that PSG midfield and then Zanny Baltimore playing
Baltimore
on the wing. But shout out to the, I don't know if we have words left for her, but shout out to the ageless wonder.
What?
That is Formiga. 43 years old. 43 years old, starting in a Champions League game as a defensive mid, played most of the game and absolutely held it down.
Yes.
You know, we don't, I just don't think there's ever enough you can say about what Formiga's managed to do. She's an amazing human being and an amazing soccer player. And it's really just an honor to watch her play and still be in awe that she can be valuable to her team at that age.
Come on now.
And one of the biggest clubs in the world. So I just wanted to shout out Formiga, and she helped spring a lot of the attack from that midfield, but they just absolutely ate and did whatever they wanted and went wherever they wanted and put a lot of pressure on that Leon defense, including a team, you know, Wendy Renard, like we said, one of the best defenders in the world. And you mentioned the second goal. It happened to be an own goal, right? So PSG's sort of shooting balls into the box and Wendy Renard goes to clear it. And Boulabi wasn't too far off her line. Like, she wasn't in a weird place, but she couldn't react fast enough to save it. So Renard tries to clear it past the back line and hits it directly at the goal. And so Boulabi can't get there in time to save it. And there's a really good still of like how, just how close that miss is. But to me, it felt kind of like redemption just because, again, Leon should have never had the first goal.
Come on now.
Today. So
right.
I think the better team won.
Yep.
And there was a ridiculous chance at the end for Leon in stoppage time. And Christiana Endler did what Christiana Endler does. She
had action.
She really hadn't seen action the whole game. And in the last minute, she makes a ridiculous save. And again, I don't understand how you don't know that's the best goalkeeper in the world.
Best goalkeeper. Period.
But yeah, so it was an exciting game and you could just feel it. You could feel PSG. Like, they knew they were the better team. And they were just like, okay, you gave us a bogus call and they get a goal. It doesn't matter. Like, we're still going to boss them and we're going to win. And they built that team to win it all. And it looks like it. Because I don't think Barcelona's got a lot after that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, speaking of which, the next match is next week for the semifinal. Is now PSG versus Barcelona. Who Barcelona is, like, missing two attackers to injury. And then Bayern Munich is playing your Chelsea.
My Chelsea Blues. That's going to be an interesting competition just because Bayern's very defense-minded, though they did lose their first league game this weekend. They got 3 goals scored on them in the league. They had 3 goals scored against them all of their first 17 games.
Wait. So who's winning this match?
My finals prediction is going to be Paris Saint-Germain and Chelsea.
Okay.
Yes, I'm biased, but I also do think Chelsea is just a bit deeper.
Okay.
Than Bayern over 2 legs. And so you don't think I'm biased. I actually have PSG winning the whole thing.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. I just think they're too good.
I agree with PSG because I don't see Barcelona's missing 2 players. Yeah. And they got issues putting goals in the net. And so unless they miraculously can put goals in the net, PSG's winning that. And then we'll see what if Chelsea make it do what it do. We'll see if the race car philosophy Emma Hayes has when shit goes hits the fan, where she just put everybody out there on the field and just go attack, put more goals in the net, if that overwhelms Bayern. Otherwise, but nobody is beating PSG, point blank, period.
I don't think if they're playing at their best, they're being beaten. I completely agree with that. So we'll see. But it'll be an exciting couple of legs. And it's really nice that they're on the weekend. So you can sit back and enjoy the nice weather and a lot of really good women's football.
Oh, so that's it, though, for that segment?
Yeah, that's it. So those are our takes and recaps for the international friendlies that happened this past week. So when we return, we're going to get into all of the news and action from the NWSL. It does not include all of the ridiculous racist stuff that happened. And we're going to talk a little bit more about one, Trinity Rodman. We're both very excited about her.
Ballin'!
And the odd coaching choices maybe that are being made in Orlando and Chicago and their issues finishing or scoring goals. So yeah, we have a lot to discuss about the games. So we'll be back in just a little bit.
Peace. Hey, what's good? This is Scott here. Just to let you know that was the end of part 1 of episode 3. We had a lot to say, again, because racism. So, it's all good. Get ready to kick back, relax, and stay tuned for part 2 coming up next.